Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone. An experience I can unfortunately speak personally to, but I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen. Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's Nintendo show. I'm your host today, Casey DeFreitas, and today I am joined by Brian Altano.
Hello.
Zach Ryan.
Harvest Moon.
And Tom Marks.
Hello.
Of the Marxian game genre.
Yeah. Mm.
Thank you so much, you guys, for joining me so early in the morning. I'm sorry for doing this to you, but I really appreciate it. Hello. How's
everyone? It's all your fault that we're here so early.
We're cool.
It's 10 o'clock. That's early,
Brian's,
you guys.
Brian's got a kid now. 10 is like...
That's nothing. I'm up for like 6 hours before 10 a.m. Yeah.
Well, today we have an incredibly packed show. We're going to be talking about all the Smash updates. We're going to touch upon the Metroid news that dropped right after our show release last week. Thanks, Nintendo. Also, thanks, Nintendo. They dropped a financial report at like 3 o'clock in the morning last night. Mm-hmm. So we're also going to talk about that.
Japan. It's crazy over there. Yeah. What are you going to do?
It's always 3 o'clock in the morning in Japan.
Yeah, yeah. It's wild.
Just every hour of the day. It's 3 a.m.
Just 3 a.m. Always.
Constant time.
That's why they're so quiet.
But right before getting into that Smash update, I do want to make a very short correction. So Perrin, I think, a Wiki's contributor last week, and his name is Tiz, and you can find him at Twitter at Tiz Teaches. Thank you so much for all of your Smash help. I super, super appreciate it. He's done a ton of stuff on the Wiki. And with that, let's talk about that giant Smash 2.0 update.
Wait, what was the mistake?
Oh, we pronounced his name wrong.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
We said your name wrong. Your name is Tiz.
We called him Fire Emblem Three Heroes.
No. I think Perry said Tig. But it is Tiz with a Z. So thank you for that. But yeah, Smash 2.0.
Yeah.
And Piranha Plant.
Just out of nowhere.
Balance updates, giant list of patch notes.
Yeah.
Do you want, but first some PSAs. Do you guys want a good PSA or a bad PSA first?
Let's do the bad one first.
Yeah.
Okay. Bad PSA. Don't use Piranha Plant, Duck Hunt, Mii Sword Fighter into All-Star mode or it'll corrupt your save.
Okay.
Or it potentially corrupts your save.
Okay. So just using those characters in All-Star mode
might
bork your save.
Yes.
Okay.
And real quick, the good PSA first. If you have purchased Smash Bros. By the 31st and registered it, if you have a physical copy, it's automatic if it's a digital. You actually have until June to redeem your code.
Okay.
So for Piranha Plant. So if you're watching the show on IGN.com, you can still do that today. If you're watching on YouTube, you're too late.
So that's true. Yeah. But also that means that couldn't Piranha Plant still bork your save in June?
Hopefully they'll have fixed it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, if you bought it digitally and you're like, I didn't get a code, you probably did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You should search your email inbox for Piranha Plant
specifically,
in quotes, and you will probably find it.
And it's spelled weirder than you think. There's a secret H in that word.
That's right.
Piranha.
Look around.
Most people forget it. Yeah.
Yes. But actually, I think the subject title is Nintendo saying, thank you for purchasing Smash Bros. And it's really generic.
It's not like, here's your code.
So I'm sorry if you deleted it. And this is why I never clean up my inboxes and why I have like more than 500,000 emails.
500,000?
You know, there might be a code in there that I need.
There might be a Piranha Plant.
Yeah.
There might be a lurking Piranha Plant.
This is cool that they are very open about the patch notes for this, because that's not, I mean, we saw with the 7.0 update on Switch recently, they were just kind of like stability and also some new avatars. Good night. But we don't really know what that means. But with this, they were pretty forthcoming and just dumped a bunch of information, which is cool.
Yeah,
let's talk about that. So Nintendo has done such a better job with these patch notes than they have before, but they're still not really conclusive.
Yeah.
You still have to do testing.
It's a huge step forward, that's for sure.
Yeah. I was going to say,
just a little detail.
I was going to say it's like baby steps, right? Like Nintendo has, like Brian was saying, they've never been very transparent in their patch notes, be it like their firmware or their hardware or their software. Like it's always like, well, we got in there, we made some tweaks. Find out.
It's more stable now.
When you play a new Smash,
Game balance adjustments.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's like the famous one, right? Yeah. But it's just like, it's nice that they're finally kind of catching up to what modern video game updates look like and giving us at least some insight into what they're getting in there and messing around with. So
slowly but surely, but I still want like crunchier data than that. I still want the numbers of things, because even now the community went through and rounded up like, okay, who got changed? Let's try to make sense of this. And we're getting things wrong because Nintendo is using language and words that is not quite what the community used. So a couple characters like Pikachu and Pichu got things like their hit stun time was reduced on like grabs and certain attacks.
And everyone was like, bad.
Yeah, everyone was like, oh, they got nerfed. But hit stun time being reduced is a good thing.
Yeah.
So actually they got buffed and people didn't figure this out until they started testing it. It's like, Nintendo, why don't you just tell us exactly what you did.
I wish they did too, because I find patch notes that detailed to be like sort of comical. I was playing Star Wars Battlefront 2 for a while, and they would do things that they'd be like, Chewbacca's neck hair is a quarter inch longer. Like, oh, all right, that's good to know in case he gets clipped there by like a thermal detonator or something. But no, I think they're like Zach said, it's baby steps towards that, hopefully.
Yeah.
And one day we will get those obnoxiously detailed patch notes. But for now, we're inching closer.
Yeah, even if they don't get really detailed with the notes, I would love for them to include explanations to why they're doing some of these things.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm interested in. I want Sakurai to say, we made it so Crom had a really big change and he can't do his combo where he does, what move is it?
I don't remember specifically what move, but I know it's the one where it kills both of you.
Yeah.
But it kills you first, or it kills them first, so it's good.
But now it kills Crom first.
Yeah.
So you can't use that as a finisher anymore.
Oh,
it's a really, really significant thing, but
in competitive.
Yeah, in competitive play.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know why did they do that? Do they hate Crom?
Yeah, probably.
I'm contractually obligated to remove myself from this conversation. So
I'm sorry, Zach.
That's okay.
But man, so yeah, they had a lot of different changes, and you can actually go find those on the Nintendo support website. I'm pretty sure we have a link to it in the article that you wrote, Tom.
Yeah, and that's the other funny thing about this whole thing, and this is such a minor complaint, but it's like the update thing on the Smash site, or on when you actually load up your Smash game, says 2.0 update, and it says game balance adjustments or whatever the line is, and then it says you can find the full details of which fighters were changed on the official website. Mm-hmm. And everyone was like, where is it? Yeah. What official website? And it's like on a support page, and it has like a button like, did you find this article helpful at the bottom? it's such a weird place to put it.
And it is so such a minor difficult complaint, to find. Like, I asked Tom for the link this morning because I Googled it, and I was like, this is not on the front page of Google. I cannot find this. Yeah. It's just articles about it that aren't linking to the page.
Very hidden.
Yeah, but I mean, like you said, it is a very good step forward. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad they're doing it. I hope they get better. And I appreciate it, and I'm happy to have another Smash update.
Yeah. It's also like totally irrelevant to me personally because I play that game with items on like an idiot, and it's just chaos.
I only ever play one character.
Yeah.
It's like, did they do anything to Young Link? No? Okay, cool. Then I don't care. Like, yeah, this is fine.
One cool thing that's like a general sort of kind of insight into their philosophy that we saw from this that's relevant even, I think, if you don't play competitively is they kind of did mostly buffs.
Yeah.
They only did a few nerfs and they did a few kind of like tweaks on people, but across the board, they very much were like, all right, we're just going to raise up a bunch of people instead of like just slamming down a lot of the top ones.
Yeah.
Which is the balanced philosophy that you see in a lot of other competitive games is like lower the power cap and they're just like, nah, let's go crazy.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah. I'm cool with that.
That's a very Smash thing to do. Just crank
make
it up.
Everything then. Better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, so back to the save corruption, I just wanted to mention real quick, if your save does get corrupted, if you have a cloud save because you have Nintendo Switch Online, you can just get your save back, but if you don't have that, you're kind of out of luck.
Mm-hmm. To get you.
And if not, don't worry, World of Light only takes 175 hours to get through. So. Unlocking all the characters in this game is just a few seconds a day, and I would quit.
Your job?
Done with everything video games. I'm never touching one ever again. Nintendo Switch in the oven.
Side note, I was at PAX South 2 weekends ago, and they had a kiosk at a booth showing off something. I think it was like a third-party controller, and they had Smash Brothers set up there. And they started the game with like no characters unlocked. And by the end of the show, people playing like all day, they had like 14 more characters. And that is like literally crowdsourcing that.
Yeah,
so,
that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. So have you guys played Piranha Plant?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I haven't had an opportunity yet.
He's weird, but I like him.
Yeah.
His movement is kind of slow hopping around, which is expected because he has like weird feet and he's in a pot.
Little booties.
But I love, he is such a like feisty little dude. Like when he gets a gun and
you're like, a feisty little one.
he curls his lip up. Like I was thinking like,
curl.
How do you exude so much character and personality out of something that
doesn't have a face.
Yeah, doesn't have a face, doesn't have eyes, doesn't have like hands really. It has like
leaves
and they'll wrap the leaves around like a gun and he'll just like look at you and do this like Tommy gun thing and like it's so much fun. A lot of his special moves are really smart. His alternate colors are really smart. Again, I play Smash Brothers like an arcade idiot, so I don't know how well he'll fit into like the you know, hardcore fighting scene, but he's really cool. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
His down B is maybe one of my favorite moves in the entire Smash Bros. Mm-hmm. series because it, you pull down into the pot, right? And then you can hold it and then shoot out, but you can tilt yourself. And that's great in the air because you can just spin while you're doing it.
Yeah.
But on ground, the pot just like tips over and then you can't get back up and you just have to like shoot sideways. And if you like do it when you're on the edge, the pot will actually fall off the edge. It's really cute. It's really funny. He's also got a lot of like thematic moves to being a stationary plant where it feels like a lot of his special moves are all about like you have to stand still to do this or you have to like kind of plant yourself plant yourself there and charge a move and then the effect goes out from you rather than you doing something or moving away.
Like his side B, he charges up a poison gas cloud.
Yeah.
When you use it again, he spits it out. And it also causes, it's like a poison smoke bomb because it causes obscurities as well.
Yeah.
Like you can't see behind it. He's a fun character. I love when he runs, his little feet come out, but also his like tongue is hanging out and he's just like, and he's, I don't know.
He's animated like a cartoon dog almost.
Like,
it's kind of great.
He's kind of got like a bit of a Poochie vibe.
Yeah.
To him. Yeah,
totally. And it's like, I don't know. Smash fans want like, they want Goku and they want like, you know, Waluigi and they want these like iconic characters from throughout history. And every now and then they're just like, no, you get this instead. You know, like I kind of appreciate that because it's not, you know, there's so many like AAA characters in this game. And I like when they just go sideways and they're like, but what if a Piranha Plant was here and he fought Mega Man and Mario.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, I was on this show a lot being really skeptical of this character because I thought it could be super generic, and I think they did a really good job of making him have personality, or I guess we keep saying him, but it's like it, or it's a plant,
it's a
whatever.
Plant. Yeah.
But yeah, they made Piranha Plant have a lot of personality, and it's encouraging to see this character, and it makes me more confident that if they do continue doing that, and I don't think they will now that we've seen they're adding Joker from Persona.
Yeah.
But if they do say, hey, we're adding Drybones as a character, that idea really scared me before. And now that I've seen what they've done with Piranha Plant, I'm kind of like, all right, I'm interested to see what you do with that. You know, I have a little more faith in that regard.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of feel like they can fit anything into that world at this point and confidently make it work with grace and humor in the same way that this character runs around.
One thing I am slightly disappointed about Piranha Plant is that he doesn't have a spike. You'd expect with that pot and just like down A someone with the pot. It looks like it would be, but it doesn't send people straight down. It sends people
side to side. Yeah.
It's like a flimsy terracotta pot, I think. It's just not very strong.
I kind of wish he had a move that broke it.
Oh, well, yeah.
You just have his little ruts running around.
If you change skins, the color of the piranha plant changes, but also the pot becomes a pipe. And so on some of the other skins, either a green pipe or a red pipe or different colors from the Mario series.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
That's really cute. So we also got with this update the ability to play with up to four players on the spirit board, which I really appreciate this update. It sounds really small, but I really like doing the spirit board. I like doing these challenges and to be able to do it with another person so that we don't have people to sit back is really nice.
Yeah.
And
do you know if everybody gets like the spirit? Like, how does that
work?
So
it's co-op. It's
local
co-op.
Who gets the spirit?
Give me the ghost.
So it's local co-op. So it's only the account that you're playing on.
Okay.
But I thought it was going to be significantly easier. It's like, oh, so there's like up to four of us. We have four tries.
Yeah.
But no, it's just the first person who dies, then everyone is out.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you got to bring good people with you.
Yes. Yes. And I did not do a good job last night and I felt really bad. But
I really like that because it's one of those. I like that they added that because it's one of those things where when I was reviewing the game, I was playing Spirit Board and I was like, oh, this is really fun. Wonder why you can't do a multiplayer, right? Like, it wasn't like a big issue. It was just like, oh, that's kind of weird that you just can't do this with friends.
Well, especially in a game that is so multiplayer focused in every other facet, basically.
Like, I miss the multiplayer events that they used to have in the old games.
Yeah.
So this kind
plenty of time for those to come back around, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So we get that back now, and I appreciate it. And even though it doesn't make things necessarily easier with most of the battles, if it's a stamina battle, it does make it easier. Mm-hmm. So there's that, especially because the AI, if you get really low stamina HP, they will go after you. They will completely ignore the other person, leaving them super open to their attacks. But other than that, so man, there's just so much Smash info. I also have some notes because Sakurai also released some play data for 1 week of play between the week of December 30th and January 5th, which was interesting. And it seems like Smash is actually a really balanced game. Like, for example, no fighter has lower than a 40% win rate and no one has above a 56.8% win rate.
That's pretty close.
In elite one-on-one Smash, which is crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy.
It's really, really even. And Ganondorf is actually the most played player.
What?
Yeah.
In elite,
one-on-one Smash. But Cloud is the most played player overall.
Overall?
Yeah. Hmm. And I didn't expect either of those characters.
Yeah.
That's so weird to like bring decades of Nintendo characters together and everyone's like, I'll take Cloud.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's got good spiky hair. Kingdom Hearts just came out.
Yeah,
people are looking for some nostalgia. I guess this is from December 30th, so actually there's no excuse, so never mind. But the other
that's
thing.
Really interesting.
Yeah, the other
I wonder
thing
who
that,
the least used character is.
I probably wanted to know that too. I wanted to know the least used character and I wanted to know who has that 56.8% win rate, but he didn't go into that.
Yeah.
But what's that?
Plenty of time for that though, because so this information came out of a Famitsu interview.
Yes.
And the theory is that Sakurai is going to have like a column in Famitsu moving forward and like he's specifically going to break down Smash stuff like this.
That's awesome.
Which would be very cool.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited for it.
I'd love to see more insight from him and maybe one day they will release him from Smash.
Maybe.
I don't think so.
But no,
he
probably
said this
not.
Was going to be his last one, didn't he?
He says that every time.
That's like Kojima talking about Metal Gear. Like, this is my last Smash game. Like, guess what? It's not yet.
He even talked about that. He said he thought everyone was going to be his last Smash because he's like shocked they let him make more of them, basically.
Yeah.
So it's his last one, but yeah. Who knows?
Well, I mean, we'll talk about the sales numbers later, but that's
you'll see, certainly not the last
you'll
one.
You'll see yeah. why they'll never release him from that yeah. prison.
And there are two more notes that he was surprised by. So everyone, he said that everyone was saying King K. Rool is overpowered, but he actually has pretty average win rates. It's 51.9%. And the other thing he noticed is that even though Daisy and Peach are pretty much the same characters, Peach has a significantly higher win rate than Daisy does. I think it's something between 10%.
Yeah,
which
it's
really
like
really weird.
I think it was like a 54.4% win rate on Peach and only like a 50% win rate on Daisy.
We ran an article. We ran
an
article.
And they played a similar amount.
From Mitchell Saltzman last week, where he interviewed some pro players about the state of the competitive scene of Smash. And Peach is like one of the most popular characters on the competitive scene, though.
And I think that's part of the number disparity, because it's really hard to look at these numbers and just be like, this is fact, right? Like,
right.
That's they're really, really, really great indicators, but there's so many things that can go into it. And one of them is the competitive community and people who really play Smash hardcore know that Peach is great. Mm-hmm. And they don't really talk about Daisy, even though Daisy is pretty much the same character. Not exactly the same, but pretty much the same. And so competitive players know to play Peach.
Yeah.
And that's why the better players are playing Peach, whereas a lot of people are playing Daisy who maybe don't really care about that side of stuff as much. And so you probably have more not highly skilled players playing Daisy than you do playing Peach, just because she's not talked about in the competitive community as much, mm-hmm. and therefore her win rate is lower. And I don't know if that's for sure, but it does show that like these numbers are not free from bias. I think Sakurai even says like they're free from bias, and it's like no, that like
certainly
stats like that
yeah.
are not free from bias,
right?
Because even the K. Rool thing, right, is like if everyone says K. Rool is overpowered, then you get a bunch of then you might get more people who don't like if he's a harder character to use, then you might get more people playing him who don't know how to use him, and therefore his win rate goes down even if he is good. And I don't know if that's actually the case, but there's a lot that goes into these numbers, and it's really cool that we're seeing them at all, yeah. right? Because then we can start talking about this. We can say, okay, why does Peach have a higher win rate than Daisy?
Well, I can say with some certainty that 100% of Zach Ryan's think Young Link is great.
That's true. That's actually, you probably have a fairly common name.
Yeah, actually, I've met a couple of Zach Ryans.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like them.
I'd be interested to see how many, like, what percentage of players immediately turn items off. Like, I wonder what those stats are like.
What's the point? Like, I know that they're like.
Yeah, we don't.
I know.
You know
that I'm opening up, like, a real can of worms, but, like, Smash to me, the chaos is.
You can
what
actually
I
turn
come,
off the can of worms.
Yeah, but the chaos is what I come to Smash for. And, like, I'm not going to put every single item on, but, like, if you're not going to put the ultimate power ups and you're not going to put, like, a couple of those things, pepper them in there, like, come on.
Because
come
they
on.
Add a.
They like,
add
come
a
on, the spicy
random,
food?
Yeah, they
I,
add.
I keep them all on. So, I mean, they. But to the pro player's defense, they remove the random chaos of the game
and make it more skill based.
Which is why everyone hated tripping in Brawl, because you couldn't do that.
I mean, I understand that,
but
what about the laser sword? That's what I'm saying.
This is what I talked about in my review, is like, that's what's so amazing about Super Smash Bros.
Oh, we get it. You reviewed the game.
No. But this is what's like so particularly good about that series as a fighting game, is that you have both types of players living in harmony within that game. And a lot of other fighting games, it's like either you're good or you're bad.
Well,
and Smash Bros. Opens up this whole window of like, this is a high skill fighting game, but also if you don't want it to be that, it's just a fun party game.
Well,
let's not mince words.
Like, the reason that I like turning items on is because it gives me like an awful Smash player somewhat of an advantage. All I have to do is be fast.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I just need to get to that item before somebody else does, and then I have a distinct advantage.
Well, like, I'm in the same boat, and also that it adds even more sort of Nintendo fun to it. Because there's like in the middle of playing, like, I'm like, oh, I know what that item is, or I know who that Pokemon is, or I know what that like assist trophy is like, no matter what I'm doing, they'll drop Waluigi into the game or like some weird Mega Man character,
Knuckles
like,
or something.
Here, yeah,
not so, Knuckles, but
in summary,
nice.
there's no wrong way to play Smash, whether you play with items or without.
Well, playing with one Joy-Con,
that's the wrong way.
Okay, yeah, that's especially the wrong way.
The wrong way to play Smash.
All right, NBC endorsed playing with one Joy-Con is the wrong way to play
that's
Smash.
True.
And if you're doing it that way, you're
put
doing
it on the
it
record.
Wrong.
I think we can all come together and agree on that.
Yeah. Well, it's been a good show, you guys.
Hey, looking for in-depth discussions about the process of making video games from the people who actually make them? Then IGN is happy to present Starburns Audio's upcoming podcast, Humans Who Make Games, hosted by comedian and Adam Ruins Everything star Adam Conover. Humans Who Make Games offers insight into the origins of games like Spelunky, Binding of Isaac, and more from the people who made them. The first episode is with Binding of Isaac and Super Meat Boy developer Edmund McMillan. Stay tuned for more from Humans Who Make Games on IGN, and be sure to subscribe to the show's Apple Podcast feed for new episodes as they debut.
So, moving on, we did miss some news last week because it came out right after our show. Thanks, Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Metroid Prime 4 is being delayed.
Yeah,
that's a word for it.
Yeah, that is a word for it. It's being started over from scratch.
Rebooted?
Reset.
It was originally being developed, I believe, by Bandai Namco.
Well, so that was rumored. It was a rumor. It was a Bandai Namco.
Okay, so we don't actually know that.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
Redacted.
It's Bando Nando. I mean, it was one of those things. It was one of those things that was so rumored and so like mentioned so often that there's probably a pretty good chance that it was in development somewhere at Bandai Namco, mm-hmm. but we will never know that.
Like, right.
Nintendo is not the kind of company that will disclose that information, especially now that they have this black mark on
it. That would just be mean.
Yeah, they've also had select parts of those teams working on select parts of Nintendo games for a while, mm-hmm. including Smash Brothers and the Mario Kart arcade games. And so, it's not unheard of that would be a thing, but either way, it's not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
Which is what they came up with a video, and it was just like, seeing this appear on Twitter that was just sort of like, we've got news for Metroid Prime. Yeah. I was like, oh boy.
And it was Shinya Takahashi from the senior marketing executive mm-hmm. officer, just on a white background talking about Metroid.
Andrew Goldfarb, friend of the show, pointed out that when they delayed Breath of the Wild, it was almost the exact same video. It was, I forget who it was at the time delivering the message, but it was the same deal. Like a higher up at Nintendo on a white backdrop mm-hmm. and almost beat for beat the way that the speeches were laid out was like, this is what's happening. Here's why it's happening. This is what you can expect from the future. Thank you. Good night. Like,
it was actually 3 a.m. in both videos.
That's right. Crazy.
Really weird.
Yeah. And they have a clock on the wall and it's just a room. It's like a hyperbolic time chamber, but for 3 a.m. But I don't want to spend too much
time.
I don't want to spend too much time on this because it is now technically a week old. Yeah, but Metroid Prime 4 is going to Retro Studios.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's a couple of things that I find really interesting. One, people in this office, especially, were losing their minds because they're like, "Yeah, it's going back to Retro," but it's like, who is left at Retro?
Right,
right. Like the key players on Metroid Prime specifically, with the exception of a couple of people, moved on to do their own thing. Like, we saw a lot of people move out and work on, what was it called? ReCore, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's a spiritual successor to the Metroid Prime franchise. Like, we've seen these people go on and
they went on to Halo as well.
Halo as well.
Oh.
So, yes, it's very cool that it's going back to Retro, but I'm curious as to how many of those people that were on that original team mm-hmm. are still working on, are now back to working on Metroid Prime. I mean, who knows? For all I know, it could be 3/4 of that team are still there.
We
do know that key players have departed.
Did you see one of the former devs from Retro tweeted out that he's basically like, so where's that thing we were working on since 2015? And also, did they just add a second studio to work on this new thing? Question mark. So that's people at the studio sort of being like, or formerly at the studio kind of saying, what, who is making this?
Right.
What's really interesting.
Well, also when you're second party at Nintendo, Retro, I believe they're second party, but when you're that kind of studio to them, do they come in and just say, okay, stop whatever you're doing.
Yep.
And now you're going to make this game instead.
Right.
I mean, that's for all
scary.
Intents and purposes. I mean, they could, if they're bankrolling the game and they're bankrolling that company, because what else has Retro been working on since Tropical Freeze?
Specifically what we talked about on this show, I believe a year or so ago, was the Star Fox Racing game that they were rumored to be working
on. That's right. Yeah.
And we haven't heard anything on that. We know that Tropical Freeze got ported to Switch and sold tremendously well, 3 or 4 million units or something
game.
Like that, which I think is enough to justify keeping a studio open, especially because I don't know how much major work went into porting
that
game.
Well, they put that new monkey in there too.
That's true. He was really hard.
Yeah.
Very hard to make.
Retro's an interesting studio really fast, too, to look at their history, because they've only released 6 games or 7 games.
Yeah, but they're all bangers.
They're all bangers. Yeah. It's Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze are the modern ones, and then it was Metroid Prime 1, 2, and 3, and then they worked on the port of Mario Kart DS or something like that, and they just have worked on great stuff.
It's crazy to me to think about a studio that's even the worst of the Metroid Prime games, Metroid Prime 2, which is universally the one that people are like, oh, that one. It's still an amazing game.
Yeah.
It's just not as good as the other two.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
they ported the Donkey Kong Country Returns to 3DS.
Yeah.
And then Tropical Freeze to Switch. And both of those sold really well, which is like, I don't know if that keeps the lights on. I don't know if like they are staffing up right now. Like,
right?
Because I mean, otherwise they wouldn't exist. Yeah. But
especially in this day and age when companies are getting shuttered left and right, right?
Yeah.
Like if your game isn't successful, like how do you stay viable? Like,
yeah.
The thing that is such a bummer to me is if this is getting reset at the beginning of 2019, that means we don't see this game until 2022.
Yeah.
And that means that by the time this game launches, the Switch will have been out for 5 years.
How relevant
is the Switch at that point? Mm-hmm. Like, are we at the, is this the very tail end? Are we looking at like a Twilight Princess situation where it's like, okay, here's the swan song, you know, it's no Kirby, but here's Metroid Prime 4 as the sun sets on the system. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe they'll make it so, never mind, I was going to say, maybe they'll make it so it comes off of the Switch and the next Nintendo console like they've done with all those Zelda games.
But they're also not looking at any sort of Switch successor right now. So, I mean, right now.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
They might, you know, change their tune based on what PlayStation and Xbox announce. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, so, Metroid is delayed, but Nintendo did announce they confirmed all of the release dates for all of the other Nintendo games this year as part of their financial report.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just going to go through this list real quick.
We've sure.
Yoshi's Crafted World on March 29th, Fire Emblem Three Houses in spring 2019, Pokemon RPG for Nintendo Switch late 2019, Animal Crossing for Nintendo Switch 2019, Luigi's Mansion 3 2019, they're all 2019, Daemon X Machina, Dragon Quest Builders 2, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 The Black Order, Bayonetta is still TBA, Metroid Prime 4 is still TBA. And so these last two weren't listed, but I want to mention them. Mario Kart Tour for mobile was originally going to come out in April, and now it's set for a summer release. And Persona Q2 New Cinema Labyrinth is coming to the West on 3DS on June 4th, which I know Tom and I are both big Persona fans. Didn't you play Persona 2, Zach?
I love Persona
everyone,
4 and
Everyone
5,
loves Persona, so we're all very excited for this news, too.
Yeah, so Persona Q is a really interesting game because it's sort of like an Etrian Odyssey, like dungeon crawler. But the thing that it does that is kind of the draw for this series, the Q series, is like it brings in all these other Persona characters from all the Persona games and just sort of mashes them together and puts them all in the same world in the same timeline, which is really interesting. So yeah, I mean, these games are really cool. I didn't play the original Persona Q. Andrew Goldfarb says it's one of his favorite games of all time. So it's something that I'm interested in checking out for sure.
Absolutely. But, Andrew said it involves the characters going into movie sets, which
that
sounds
makes
really
sense.
Interesting and fun. And I want to use it. I mean, so we actually do have I'm going to move a question block question up here.
Sure.
Okay.
But Keaton John Armstrong on Facebook asked, do you think Pokemon will become the tentpole game of 2019? Or do you think another game we know or don't know about could take that spotlight?
I mean, I don't, Animal Crossing
what's bigger than Pokemon?
Like Animal Crossing has like massive selling potential. I don't know if it will do Pokemon numbers, but
Pokemon is like a household name.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like even if you don't give a shit about, even if you don't care about video games at all, sorry,
no Pokemon.
You care about Pokemon, right? Like it's, you know, at least of those little monsters. Like, yeah. So I don't know. Like the idea that especially given the success of Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go Pikachu last year, like this game is set to do a tremendous number on what Nintendo sales figures look like.
If it comes out in 2019.
Yeah.
Because I'm skeptical.
If it doesn't, I'm also skeptical, but if it doesn't come out in 2019, Nintendo's going to be in deep trouble.
For Pokemon? So. I really think it is. I can't remember the last time a Pokemon game got delayed. I can't remember.
I guess that's true.
It's not. Yeah, it's not and very common that Nintendo delays any of their big games.
And this is a reaffirmation, and they always come out in November. Well, I mean, I guess Soul Silver and Heart Gold came out in the spring that year when that game came out.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
those weren't.
They're
brand new.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, I think that it is probably the biggest game on this list. But the crazy thing to me is that everything on this list is pretty big in some way or other.
Yeah.
Not everything, but like Nintendo has a lot of big games coming out this year. That there's a new Fire Emblem, Luigi's Mansion, Animal Crossing, and Pokemon game in 2019 is crazy. Like that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's. I think the general conversation, like people are looking at this year for Nintendo and being like, ooh, where are all their big games? And what people don't realize is like, Mario and Zelda, and to a lesser extent Metroid, are like the top tier AAA Nintendo franchises. Those are the ones that people like automatically associate when you hear the word Nintendo.
Yeah.
But then below that they have, and I don't even want to say B tier, but it's like a second tier of franchises that are supremely popular, but just in a splintered way. Like Fire Emblem, Animal Crossing, Yoshi, Kirby, like these games have these dedicated fan bases that come out in full force when those games get released.
Animal Crossing also has that massive casual crossover potential. Casual gamers come out and play that game in huge numbers. People that don't play Metroid and don't play like hardcore Smash Brothers matches and stuff like that, because they want to collect the items and build the house and pay off the raccoon man and get that money.
Animal Crossing has that people paper. Who do play paper. Those more difficult games. Like, I don't want to call it more difficult, but Zelda, Mario, all of those kind of games, those people play Animal Crossing too.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, games like Bayonetta and Metroid Prime are going to be the games that sell probably the least of some of the games on this list.
Yeah.
They don't sell well. I mean, Bayonetta did pretty well on Switch this time around. It did not on Wii U, but...
I just think it's hilarious that there's so much coming out in 2019 for Nintendo, and we have one release date.
Yeah.
We have one release date and two release windows, and then a bunch of 2019s. Like, that's...
But that's their jam, right?
I know. It's just so funny that this year looks packed, and we don't know when any of it's going
to
arrive.
It's because Nintendo loves to do that thing of,
anxious.
Like... Yeah, but from a Wiki's perspective, I could totally see that. But, like, as somebody that doesn't need to write full guides for a game... I love the approach that they've taken this generation in that they've just been like, and by the way, that game comes out next month. And it's, whoa, that rules. Like, we knew it was coming this year, but we had no idea when. So,
And then it's like, I was going to take a vacation that week, but I guess I'm not anymore. But
this definitely feels to me like,
I'm kidding.
This definitely feels like we're going to get a lot of these dates at E3 or just before that. And we're going to start,
direct.
Like, they're going to really sort of, I feel like they're going to backload the second half of 2019, rather than put a lot of stuff in the first few months.
I think Animal Crossing, Luigi's Mansion, and Marvel Ultimate Alliance and Pokemon are all fall games.
Yeah.
I think Daemon X Machina, Dragon Quest Builders are summer games, and then everything else already has a window.
All right, let's refer back to this episode and see if Zach was right when those...
For my new segment, Zach was right.
For episode 442, we'll come back. I'm just saying out loud so I remember. Okay, I'm kidding. But hey, Brian, you wanted to talk about first-party game attach rates. This is incredibly interesting.
So we got some really cool numbers very late last night at 3 a.m. Japan time, which is. First of all, hardware shipments worldwide. Sorry, I was looking at my phone. I was pulling those up. In Japan, we've seen 7.7 million Switch units, 12.9 million in the Americas, and 11 million in other. Now, for that, attach rates. And what that means basically is... how many people who own a Switch bought these games? The best-selling game on Switch by a pretty big margin is Mario Kart 8, a last-gen port. Hooray. 47% of Switch owners own that game, so basically roughly 1 in 2, minus a couple people who are like, no, I have it already. 43% own Mario Odyssey. 37% own Smash Ultimate, which is huge because that game is less than 2 months old at this point.
Yeah.
Right under that, 36% own Breath of the Wild.
So how is only 36% owning Breath of the Wild?
That was because the same reaction I had.
That game, like... it's the best launch game of all time.
Right.
How you bought a system on launch day and didn't pick up Breath of the Wild.
Well,
I have a theory, actually.
I'll tell you what it is. Oh. A lot of people bought Switches after the launch window.
Sure, there's that.
And when
that,
they came in, they didn't buy it for Breath of the Wild. They bought it for Mario Kart. They bought it for
Super Mario Odyssey.
Odyssey. I think probably on top of that, there are probably a lot of people who bought Breath of the Wild on Wii U, not that there are a lot of people who own Wii U's in general, just probably people who bought Breath of the Wild on Wii U, skipped the launch window, bought a Switch later, and didn't need it again.
Yep.
Think a lot of people brought Breath of the Wild on Wii U?
Yeah.
I think so.
I mean,
if you already owned Wii U...
12.5 million people bought it on Wii U.
I mean, like, if you already owned a Wii U and weren't desperate for a Switch and the only game you wanted to play was Breath of the Wild, there's no need for you to get a Switch for that.
Mm.
There were no other launch titles that really... I mean, what were you going to get a Switch for? A 1-2 Switch? Nah.
The game no one talks about anymore. It's not. It's never on any of these lists.
Good. Yeah.
Although it sold a million at launch.
Good.
Right up in that.
One of the only games.
Pokemon Let's Go did 31% of all Switch owners own that game, and 26% own Splatoon 2, which is basically one of four. And the numbers keep dwindling after that. I believe it's like Tropical Freeze and a couple others keep going from there.
And we know that they just said that they sold what, like 32 million.
Switches? 32 million.
So we can kind of like, there's about 15 million Mario Kart 8s out, like sold.
And maybe? I didn't throw this in here, but they readjusted their sort of fiscal sales pitch of 20 million units down to 17. I think that's lowballing. I think they'll probably hit 18 or 19, but they will not hit 20.
But they're not on pace right now.
Yeah. Exactly. But these are gigantic numbers. I believe that I read that the Switch is effectively outperforming the first 22 months of almost every other next-gen console, and including a few last-gen consoles. PS4 is a little weird because they're neck and neck because Switch launched in March, whereas PS4 launched in November. But those two systems are incredibly close, and PS4 has sold incredibly well. So this bodes well for Nintendo.
So yeah. I know that Smash Ultimate beat out Smash Brawl. Mm-hmm. Is the Switch beating out Wii overall as well? I'm sorry to ask you such a difficult question.
I don't think in the first 22 months, I don't believe it is, because the second year for the Nintendo Wii was absolutely insane. Like, I don't think people remember. Like, at first, people were kind of like, oh, that's cool. You can go bowling and make yourself. That's great. But the next year, people, like, that's when the grandmothers came out and they're like, you can go bowling and make yourself.
It was stuff like, so with the Wii, like, I would bring the system to like Thanksgiving or something, and then I'd come back next year and all of my relatives would have one.
Yep. Exactly.
It was that kind of thing.
They all played Resident Evil 4. They loved it. Boom, headshot.
So two more really short topics. I just wanted to mention that Original Stitch, a Japanese clothing company, is coming out with a line of 151 styled Pokemon shirts. And they are formal, business style, high quality, fully customizable shirts. Kind of like the one that Zach Ryan has on.
They're really awesome.
They are great. They
Get
have,
ready to see a bunch of those shirts on this show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they have 151 different patterns, and you can fully customize it. There are men's cuts, women's cuts, casual and formal, and you can change the collar, you can change the solid, you can change the cufflinks. There's so many different things you can do with those shirts, and they're only $90. And I know that sounds outrageous, and I'm saying out.
Customizable fitted shirts, though, for $90
is like,
yeah, that's a good deal.
Yeah, and they
I don't know
the,
that it's a good deal, but it's not unheard of.
I mean,
it's the quality that you would wear to a really an office job that requires
or like
you to
a
wear
really nerdy wedding.
Yeah. What I like about these a lot that they're subtle. They're not immediately recognizable as something Pokemon, which means you could wear them to work and people wouldn't really notice until they really looked. When you look closely, you can sort of see it's just like, oh, that's like, you know, Pikachu's electrical bolts and there's his little tail, but you wouldn't know like from across the street. It doesn't say like Pokemon,
right?
Which is great.
They're really nice. They actually have a really nice sentimental trailer on their website that has almost nothing to do with the shirts, but it's really cute. And I encourage you guys to go watch it because that's exactly what the point they're trying to make with that commercial. But next, I would like us to have a moment of silence for the death of the Wii Shop channel.
Yep.
Anyway, so the Wii Shop channel closed down on January 30th. You can no longer purchase software on the Wii, but you can download it, but that's only for now, because Nintendo said the ability to re-download WiiWare and Virtual Console games will also stop at some point. We will announce specific details as that time approaches.
So you can access your old purchases. You can't make new purchases.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know Brian, on a previous episode, talked about how to build your own Virtual Console on Switch in episode 440. So if you're interested in that, go back and watch that episode.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But
yeah, this was a really ahead of its time format to deliver retro video games to a then modern console. I really like the Wii Shop channel. I like the fact that we got press releases every week where they'd be like, hey, this obscure, you know, TurboGrafx-16 shmup is here, and so is Kid Icarus. And then next week, here's Mario 2 and a bunch of other things. And also using it as a vehicle to deliver indie games where we, you know, that couldn't basically afford a physical retail release was really cool too. I played a lot of like really awesome, just small developed gems that are on that system that would be $8 or $9, and you know, you could download them right to your console. It was a really special thing. So I appreciate it. I'm glad that we have the eShop the way it is now. I miss the virtual console and the way it was. So yeah, it was a good place.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
So man, we are already 40 minutes in. We have a lot to talk about still, but I want to talk about what we're playing, and I definitely wanted to talk about at least Unruly Heroes, which is something we played a little bit last night. It came out last week after that Nindy Direct, and it is a side-scrolling action RPG with four different characters with local drop-in co-op. Like, you can go in and out whenever, and you can switch between characters freely, and I had a lot of fun with it yesterday.
Yeah, Casey and I and Per sat down and played, and Tom, you got the chance to play a little bit of it as well. We sat down and played a couple of levels, and I was really impressed with the way that you, like, how fluid it was to switch characters on the fly to solve puzzles. Like, one of the things that always kind of bugs me about, like, a four-player platformer like this is, like, how you'll get in each other's way, and I didn't feel like we were doing too much of that. Like, we were all working really well together, and the characters are really different enough that it you can feel... just how different they are, like, in terms of their move sets, in terms of, like, the abilities that they have to interact with the world. It's a really interesting game. And I will say that, like, each of these characters has multiple moves.
Yeah.
Like, multiple different attacks, multiple different specials. It's really kind of, like, impressively deep.
So it doesn't get stale quickly.
No, I don't
think... Not as far as I can tell. Like, again, we only played the first couple of levels, but, like, I really dug it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to play more of it. And you were right. It was developed by people who previously worked on Rayman. Yeah.
Zach was right.
So Rayman, it has a good, like, pedigree.
Origins?
You know, I'm not...
Rayman Odyssey.
Sure.
gosh. Yeah, I liked... I think the combat for me was really the big draw. Like, Brian, you and I have talked previously about a platformer's jump that you can tell very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Within half a second.
Not in love with the jump in this game.
Oh, really? Because
no. I really liked it.
Like, yeah. To me, it was very, like... I don't know. Was it too floaty for you, or
it was, like, a little bit imprecise and floaty for me?
See, I felt the opposite way. Like, I felt within a first couple of minutes of playing through that level, like, I knew exactly where I was going to land every time I jumped.
I had problems with, like, climbing onto ledges, like grabbing edges and climbing up over things. Mm-hmm. It was, like, a little issues here and there, but it also felt like that wasn't totally the point, right? Like, you can get platformers that aren't, like, the best jumpers to me and then still be great because of, like, the combat in that game and the combos and all the different moves and the fact that you can mid-combo switch to a different character really fast. Mm-hmm. It was really, really cool. It brought something different that I really liked.
That's awesome.
I mean, not every game can be a bridge builder, so.
But it's really cool. The art is amazing. The story is a retelling of Journey to the West, which has been done before. But
I was going to say, finally, a game that retells Journey to the West.
But I really enjoy it, and I'm really excited to play more of it, especially because it's easy drop and co-op. Like, you can just go play it on the couch, and, you know, you want to join? It's sweet. Yeah. It's nice. I'm appreciating it. But I want to move on to games this week. Really quick, this game called Demo is a music rhythm game that centers around a mystifying relationship between Demo and a little girl. I don't know what that means. but it has Nintendo Labo piano support, which is really interesting. So you can actually play the piano as this character in this game, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
For select songs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well,
I could
at least you tried.
The cone of disappointment shrunk down to, like, the tip of an upside-down pyramid. There.
If you're interested in those kind of games, I think you should still look it up. And
yeah, that's cool.
Another game which has a really good pedigree of a bunch of people who used to work on Mega Man Zero games is...
Underrated series.
Yes. Yeah. Is Dragon Marked for Death. And this is another side-scrolling action RPG, and it's also side-scrolling, you know. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't say this in the shop, but there are two different versions. And Frontline Fighters comes with Empress and Warrior characters, and Advanced Attacker comes with Shinobi and Witch. So if you buy one, you have to buy the other one as DLC. It does not say this anywhere in the eShop. Yeah. I had to go to their actual website to find that out.
And they both have full Labo piano support.
Oh, yeah. You can control all of your characters with the Nintendo Labo. But definitely check out the main website for more info on that game. I know some of you were talking about it in our... Facebook forums.
Is it Dragon subtitle Marked for Death, or is there a Dragon Marked for Death in this game?
You know what? I can't tell you that.
Okay.
I apologize.
Spoilers?
It's a spoiler. Look it
up. It's a spoiler. Yeah. Colons are spoilers now. Oh, wait. That could be taken a lot of different ways. Anyway.
Oh, no.
Yikes.
So those games are out this week, and you know what else is out this week? Wargroove.
Wargroove!
Which Tom Marks reviewed for us.
I did do that.
Tell us about Wargroove.
I gave
those good doggos.
8.5 because of all of the dogs and nothing else. Pretty much it was a dog game, and I was happy. No, there's adorable little dog things, but that's
I was
going to
say, our reviews are really going to
No, it's a Advance Wars style tactics game, and I say Advance Wars style because... They wear their inspiration on their shoulder. They very, very much are upfront. It's developer Chucklefish, people who made Starbound. They're very clear about, like, hey, Nintendo hasn't made an Advance Wars game in 11 years. Right. Just make an Advance Wars game.
I just wanted to point out that in the notes you put, oh my God, Advance Wars is back, but is it? And then in parentheses you put yes.
Yes, yes. Yes, it is.
This feels like it was a Kickstarter game from people who used to work on Advance Wars.
Well, the funny thing is there were already Kickstarter games from people who used to work on Advance Wars, and they were not good. So,
oh.
Yeah.
But this one is.
Yeah, so a couple other games, like I think it was Tiny Metal was the one that was developed
that was
the, by the
That
creator.
Was the one that was last year that everybody was like, oh, here comes Advance Wars 2.0. Yeah.
And it was kind of just like, eh. Like, it wasn't bad. It was just like, it looked kind of low quality to be mean about it. Like, it just looked a little rough around the edges. It was like a 3D look. Mm-hmm. This one is not the exact same because it looks how, like, you remember Advance Wars looking.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's very, very, very lush compared to what Advance Wars was if you actually go back and look at Advance Wars.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. The pixel art is really well done.
Yeah, and it's really cool because it also puts its own spins on it. Like, there's this whole crit system where your critical hits are dependent on where you're standing. So, like, if you're Pikemen, you need to have them stand in a line next to each other to do crits, or dogs, you need to like surround an enemy with more dogs to do criticals. And so it makes you think a lot about the movement, and they add a lot of little things that it's like, yeah, it's Advance Wars, but it does do stuff differently in really cool ways.
I feel like such a big part of Advance Wars was the actual charm of the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that Wargroove has that a similar sort of charm?
It's very charming. Yeah. Yes. Like, if you go, there's a dog commander named Caesar, and he's wearing armor. And if you go into his description, it, like, where usually it tells you, like, their crit information and stuff, it just says he's a very, very good boy. Like, it's a really, really cutesy game.
Yeah.
The writing.
Can that be trusted, though? He might have written that himself.
That's fair.
True.
No, he can't talk. There's really good, like, moments where he goes to. I want to stress, he's just a dog.
Okay. With armor. With armor.
Yes. But he's not like a magic dog. There's all these side quests.
His howl is inspirational.
That's true. He can howl and he inspires the troops around him and they go again. It's
great. That's awesome.
There are side quests where you go into save.
10 out of
like,
10.
All the side quests are about like saving civilians or saving villagers, and he always is fighting these bandits, and the bandits, there's this great recurring storyline in these bandit side quests where the bandits are like, hey, it's that dog again. Come, everyone help me beat up this dog. And they just like keep getting their butt kicked by a dog. It's really charming in that regard. The story and campaign itself is like a little, like it continues to be charming and funny, but it's very shallow. Like, the campaign is basically just a series of connected missions. There's nothing besides the story, there's nothing in between that progresses or changes over them. You don't level up. You're not changing units. None of that.
And you were telling me earlier that the mission length can be kind of unforgiving. Like,
yeah, it's
you could
not
take an hour in and then lose and then.
Oosh.
Yeah, it's not all of them, but definitely 45 plus minute missions are not uncommon. I had one that took me like 2 hours. I've heard reports from other people that are saying I'm a casual and they don't take that long for them. But for me, it was...
Well, yeah, everybody's a better gamer than us. I mean, it's fine.
I guess so. But yeah, they
just
can
love
be
the dogs.
Long. Yeah. And while you can save and quit and come back to the point...
Oh, that's nice.
Excuse me. You can come back to the point you left at. You cannot actually save and load. So if you're... And that's, I'm sure, to stop save scumming.
Yeah,
save scumming
sure.
is this thing where you just save every turn, and then if something goes bad, you just do it again, and you do it again, and you do it again. I really would have liked saves, even if it was just like really limited saving, because when you get 45 minutes into a mission and it's all like some of the missions are literally just like run away, right? You're just trying to run across the map and you do that for 45 minutes. And then if you lost at the end, you would just like it wouldn't be fun to do that again.
Right. Yeah.
And I had that happen a couple times and at that point I actually lowered the difficulty a little bit. Because the difficulty sliders are super cool in the campaign. You can actually just go in and by percentage points turn down the amount of damage your units take.
Oh, wow.
So for most...
It's super customizable then.
Yeah. And for most of the back half of the game, I like just tuned it down like a few percentage points just to give me that little bit of safety net that the save would have provided. And I had a blast because some of those missions are still real, real hard.
That's really nice. I mean, I played some tactical strategy games, like a Devil Survivor. There was this one boss fight. And like 40 minutes into the game, into the mission, you think you're done, and then they throw another really hard boss at you. And I just did not want to do that an hour every mm-hmm. time for the chance to lose this really hard boss after mm-hmm. getting mm-hmm. through the first hour.
And that stuff's frustrating in yeah. any tactics game. People complain about that in the Fire Emblem games all the time, mm-hmm. where whenever you have a mission where it's like you get really far in and then the enemy spawns 12 units around you and it's like, oh, now you got to fight out of this. It's just like, that doesn't help me make good tactical choices early on. It just means I have to replay this mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that I really want to stan about this game, though, and like the campaign was fun, but not mind-blowing, right? The thing that's incredible about Wargroove is that there's also an arcade mode, which is really, really fun, and much shorter missions.
Interesting.
There's also puzzle mode, where there's all these missions that are just like, you're dropped into the middle of a fight, and it's like, you got one turn to win, go. And you just have to do it, and they're pretty hard. And then there's this unbelievable level editor. And I'm talking, you can make any level that's already in the game. You can make entire campaigns where you have a world map and you are dropping levels connected to each other with story.
How cool.
There's a cutscene editor where you can use any model in the game, give any character dialogue.
So you could essentially emotes. Build your own side story in the
RPG
game.
Maker.
The vibe I that's got awesome. It's RPG Maker for Advance Wars, and they're gonna have mod support eventually.
Damn, that's
on PC.
Cool.
Yeah.
So like it's only a matter of time before this game comes out on PC and then people just make Advance Wars
make
in
right.
it.
Own, yeah.
Oh yeah.
And on top of that, you share those online, you can download them. It's really easy to download other people's maps. And it's cross-play between Xbox One, PC, and Switch. So if you make a map on Switch, I can go onto my PC and download it, and then we can play against each other on a cross-platform on it.
That's really
That's
neat.
That rule.
It's like this game has a lot of little issues. We were talking about that earlier with like a lot of little bugs here and there.
You're playing it as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's just so much in it mm-hmm. that is so well done. It's really impressive. It's a really, really great game.
Yeah, you showed me, you made the IGN logo.
Yeah, as like the IGN logo
a playable
as a
map,
level.
Which is really cool because it like the that way rules. You did the colors and then you had your Joy-Cons on the side, it sort of just perfectly matched. Mm-hmm. It's very beautiful. Nice work.
Thank you. Thank you.
So yeah. thanks for telling us about the review. Is there anything else you want to...
No, it's great. Just it's really fun. If you like Advance Wars, you're going to like it. If you don't, then I don't know, don't play the game. But basically, if you're into tactics, it's like just a really, really great tactics game. Probably the campaign on its own is not like enough to sell me, but there are so many other things around it that I fell in love. I really did.
And it's out February 1st?
February 1st, so this Friday.
Okay, yeah. And if you're interested, you can go read Tom's full review on IGN.com. And now, we only have a few minutes left, but I would like to play a little game, as Zach likes to call it, question block.
Game of the year.
Yeah, game of the year, question block, every year.
Mm-hmm. If Pear were here, he would say, no, it's not a game.
But our first question comes from Jeff Gibney from our NVC Facebook podcast forums. And he asks, with Piranha Plant corrupting save files, what save files have you had corrupted on you? Also get the thing.
I had, so when the BioShock collection came out for PS4, I went back and played the original BioShock. It's one of my favorite games of all time. But I ran into a save bug where no matter how far I progressed past a certain point, it would only load me to this one point.
Ooh.
Yeah, and so like I'd play and I'd get to, you know, like, you know, an hour or so ahead of that. And then if I walked away from my PlayStation and came back and rebooted it, it would just be at that same save point. Like,
sucks.
Yeah, so I ended up having to just sit through the whole like last half of the game in one sitting, which it's not a very long game, but it was like, it was kind of a bummer. So,
yeah.
If you had a GameCube, which you probably did if you're listening to the show, you probably remembered memory cards and third-party memory cards.
Oh, no.
Third-party memory cards.
Yeah. They could hold so much data, like 256 megabytes, just tons, like, which is, I think, four photos now. Yeah. And I was playing Wind Waker, and when you beat Wind Waker and go through a second time, there's this awesome end game where they give you this picto box, which is basically a camera, and it lets you take pictures of everything in the game and turn them into amiibos, basically. And so you would take these photos, you'd scan them into this machine, and you would get this gallery of high-res 3D models of every character in the game that you could spin around. And I was on like a 99% completion run of doing that. By the way, a lot of those are like bosses that you can only get once, that have second forms,
really
that you can
cool.
only get like half of once. It was really hard to do. And one day I just put in my Mad Catz 256 megabyte memory card.
Only 90s what? Kids remember yeah, Mad Catz.
And it was just nuked. Everything on there was just gone. And I lost everything. Luckily, like my Animal Crossing save file was okay because I used the one that came with the game because it did. But everything else on there was destroyed, including my
those Mad Cats, like the high capacity memory cards. You could sneeze at them and they would get erased. Like
they were so terrifying. Ridiculous. Yeah. So terrifying. Yeah.
Now like I'm afraid Russian to go roulette. Check mine.
So I had a laptop die literally right before I was at the final boss of Borderlands 1, and I didn't go back and beat it for years after that because I was crushed. But probably the most tragic was when I was a little kid, because I'm younger than you two.
How dare
the band
you?
Or us?
Both? That was such a low effort joke.
So I had to rent most of my Super Nintendo games from a local game store.
I love you, Brian Altano.
I love you too, Zach.
So I had to rent them, and a lot of the Super Nintendo games that had saved onto the cartridge.
Yes. Right.
And so I had to memorize the serial number of the game at the rental store so that I didn't get the wrong one.
Oh my God.
And then there were times where I would I wouldn't have enough like allowance or whatever to rent it again, and because I didn't understand that buying was a thing you could do.
Yep.
So I would rent the game and I'd bring it home and my save file would just be gone because
somebody else had rented it.
And it was like that happened a couple times.
Ugh.
Always hurt. So that's not corrupted, but it was crushing childhood.
It was corruption in the hearts of men for deleting your save files off that cart.
You started that story being like, I'm young, and then you're like, here's this thing no one has had to deal with in 30 years.
Well, I just meant because I couldn't afford Super Nintendo games.
Oh,
like, I had to rent them.
To be fair, I also couldn't afford Super Nintendo games.
Do you think they just give you a ton of money when you reach a certain age?
Yes. Yeah.
Congratulations on being 25.
You're 15. Here's 10 games.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any save files. I don't think I've had save files just disappear out of thin air on me. I have accidentally erased stuff, which was sad. But I did have some corrupted children erase my Pokemon save.
Wait, corrupted children?
I mean, they had to be corrupted. It just takes some poor girl's Pokemon game and delete her save out
Jesus.
Of
Jesus.
Oh, menace.
Like, so these are like high school bullies?
I thought you meant like little
No, I was on a right? field trip. I think I must have been like 9 or something in like a summer camp. And we all left all of our Game Boys and everything in the buses. And some boys snuck onto the bus after we had already gotten to the park to get my Game Boy and delete my
just
save.
Yours?
Just mine.
Dang.
And delete my save just because they were mean for no reason.
Sounds like somebody had a big old Pokemon crush on you.
Yeah. No, what prison are those kids in now?
I don't know. I'd like to know. But so I went back. So they came back after they did it and they're like, oh, Casey, you should go check your Pokemon save. Ha ha ha.
So
and
guilty.
I went and snuck on the bus and checked it and it was deleted. And I went back and obviously I told on them because that's really mean.
obviously I told on them.
Well, I was like 9 and I was trying to complete my Pokedex. I had 107 Pokemon. So I was, you know, pretty close.
Kids can be so cruel.
This and is a formative memory we're hearing right now.
Well, I remember.
That's why Casey's so mean.
I moped. Yeah, because this happened to me and I've never been the same ever since. But
built a wall around her heart.
And moped around it. We were at a pool and instead of going in the pool and having fun and swimming, I like sat on a bench and just like,
that's what I did at most pool parties anyway.
And what's that? But I remember the counselor got everyone together and told us like, you cannot do this. And she turned over to me and she's like,
deleting Pokemon.
She turned over to me and she's like, how many did you have? And I was like, 107. She's like, she had 107 Pokemon. She almost completed the Pokedex and you took that from her.
That's a good teacher.
Yeah, she was great. And then they couldn't go on next week's field trip.
Oh,
justice.
Honorable mention to when I lost literally every save file on my Switch a year after.
Oh, that's pretty bad, too. Yeah.
No. I try not to think about that too much.
Oh.
But there it is again, now, the center in my brain.
Now at least we have cloud saves 1 year too late.
Yep.
Sorry, Brian.
But, don't play Piranha Plant All-Star mode.
Or do, you know, test the fate. There's a chance it won't corrupt your save.
That's true. It's like a reverse lottery. I keep losing.
Don't do that. Oh, poor Brian. And we have time for one more question from Chris Martin. He says, when will we get a new Monster Hunter entry on the Switch?
Shocking that of the questions on the list, this is the one that
and
you chose.
And to that, I don't have an answer for you, but thank you for allowing me the chance to say Monster Hunter on NVC this week. and with that is the end of our show.
When would you like a new Monster Hunter on the Switch? Soon?
I would love a new Monster Hunter whenever. I actually really want a Monster Hunter. I want a sequel to Monster Hunter Stories to come out on the Switch.
That'd be cool.
That would be awesome. Yeah. I would very much enjoy that. But that's our show. Remember, you can catch us. Actually, I want to thank you guys for joining me this morning. I really appreciate because we had time change and it's early and super appreciate it. But you can catch NBC on IGN.com every Thursday at 3 p.m. and every Friday on YouTube at youtube.com/
Nintendo Voice Chat.
Yeah. There you go. Thanks again. My name is Casey Tafridis, and remember, always come to NBC to...
Get the thing.
Get the thing.
Get it.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.